Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 111 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include February 28th at the Voodoo Comedy Playhouse in Denver, Colorado. March 15th at the Virgil in Los Angeles. That is a free show. March 21st at Union Hall in Brooklyn. That is going to be a championship edition. Today's show, however, is round two, recorded back on April 16th, 2013 at the Nerdmelt Theater in Los Angeles with a hell of a lineup. DC Pearson, Matt Dwyer, Kevin Biggins, Kyle Kinane, and Jan Davidson reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions. So first you'll hear them draw topics, then we'll fast forward into the future to hear the finished pieces. Enjoy. This month, the next one on my list is Girls, the HBO show Girls. It's on my list. I should point out, I only ever watched the pilot, and I did not enjoy it. Harumph, said Lena Dunham's stupid face. How am I going to pay my bills? The doughy ingenue sat with her three female cohorts, pondering her next move. I forgot to tell you guys, when you're done, pass them to the end of the aisle, and my lovely assistant Megan, that's Megan over there in the dark, wave your hand in the air, Megan. Big and high. Big hand for Megan, if you can clap. Pass them down, Megan will collect them. Thank you. All right, back to our friend, the doughy ingenue. She sat with her three female cohorts, pondering her next move. Lena's parents had recently cut her off from the family teat at the age of vaguely early 20s, and she didn't know what to do, because there aren't a lot of jobs out there for entitled 20-somethings with zero life experience and even fewer skills, because Jezebel wasn't hiring bloggers. Here's a perfectly plausible suggestion, said the hot one, who, if the pilot is any indication, is also the only one who might be a rational human being. A fact that you would think goes against the feminine ideals that Lena supposedly holds dear. Something pretentious, said the blonde one, who is English because that's the laziest shortcut to pretension for bad writers. Something naive, said David Mamet's whiny daughter. But none of their answers satisfied Lena. Looks like this is a job for pouting in the bathtub, she said. Lena walked inside and got directly into the tub because she was already naked, even though they had been out on the stoop that whole time. Lena thought and thought and pouted for what seemed like an eternity, and then she had an idea. Later that night, Lena arrived at the apartment of that skinny dude who is clearly gay but fucking her anyway. Before we do the sex part, I have to tell you something, said Lena's tedious mouth. I guess I'm like a prostitute now. It's life experience or whatever that I'll write a blog about one day. Anyway, it's $20 for the usual. It's $30 if you want me to do more than just lie there. For $40, you can cut a hole in the sheet so you don't have to look at me. If I'm allowed to cry and or keep Sex and the City on in the background, you get a 10% discount. If you want to watch me pout in the bathtub after, that's another $5. It's $10 if one of my roommates is in there with me. For $50, I'll keep all my clothes on and I'll just blow you. I'm just kidding, I didn't bring any clothes. Whatever, said the guy, and handed her a $100 bill, which she immediately posted a photo of on Instagram with the caption, "Looks like brunch is on me, LOL." And they got down to it. The guy undressed and flopped his dumb dick around everywhere. He slapped Lena in the face with it for some reason, and then she jacked him off. He came on one of her asinine tattoos, and she lapped it up because it was the only hot meal she'd get that day. In the end, he spent $60 on sex and then paid her another $20 to get out of going down on her, and $20 more for cab fare to get her out of his apartment before she said anything else. Lena Dunham left feeling proud of herself. She was a businesswoman now, in charge of her own destiny, like a grown-up adult. She was also a sex worker, but she tried not to dwell on that. When she got back to her apartment in probably Williamsburg, which she shared with one or all of the aforementioned crude caricatures of human beings, they were all arguing over which one of them was Carrie, even though all of them were just Samanthas with wildly varying degrees of sex appeal. Except, of course, for David Mamet's daughter, whose name might be Zumba. She's clearly just retarded Charlotte. Lena Dunham kicked off her shoes and frumpy overcoat, which was all she was wearing. "I think it's so brave that you're naked all the time," said the British one. "I know," said Lena, and then added, "By the way, I'm a prostitute now." "Well, that's no surprise," said the British one, eye-rollingly. "You've always been a whore. It's about time you got paid for it," said the hot one, whose dad is Tom Brokaw or something. "What's a prostitute?" said Zumanity Mamet. The other three girls just looked at her pityingly. "And why don't you ever have clothes on? And how did three out of the four of us ever get on television?" No one was listening at this point. The insufferable blonde one and Lena had gone to the bathroom where they were joylessly finger-banging themselves in the tub while the hot one stared at herself in the mirror. The British one was jamming one of those loofahs on a stick up her twat while Lena watched and rubbed one out. The British one didn't come because she was so worldly that she was basically over orgasms. Lena probably farted and expected everyone to act like it was no big deal. The hot one eventually wandered off because she realized she could be anywhere, fucking literally anyone else she wanted. The other two dried off and one of them got dressed. Then they both went out for drinks. Lena picked up a copy of every magazine along the way that had an article about her, which was literally every magazine, because she's the voice of her generation, which is the saddest fathomable commentary on America. All right, if I get that bag of suggestions from Ms. Megan. And let's bring the round two comics to the stage. Kyle Kinane, DC Pearson, Matt Dwyer, Kevin Biggins, and Jan Davidson, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. All right. So here's how this works, you guys. They're going to draw one by one. If they like their first suggestion, they can take it and run with it. They'll have about a half hour to write. If they don't like it or they're not sure, I'll draw a second one, and then you guys vote with applause on which one they have to write. All right? So let's start all the way down to the end with Mr. Kyle Kinane. Kyle Kinane, ladies and gentlemen.
Dwyer booed me.
Kyle, how do you feel? I think I already know the answer. Kyle, how do you feel about Smokey and the Bandit? How the fuck do you think he feels about Smokey and the Bandit? Yeah, Kyle's taking Smokey. All right. Matt Dwyer, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Specifically, Dave Foley's character from News Radio.
Okay, I'll take that.
Taking it? Matt Dwyer, News Radio. DC Pearson, ladies and gentlemen. Keep it going for DC.
Lena Dunham's really talented.
He clearly cares if he ever gets a writing job again.
Close personal friend.
Well, they're hitting the nails on the head tonight. Magic the Gathering.
Done.
Kevin Biggins, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Biggins. Kevin, how do you feel about Castaway?
I'll take Castaway.
Castaway. And Jan Davidson, keep it going for Jan Davidson. Whew. A lot of pressure. Everybody else is taking the first one, I'm just saying.
I know, it'll be fun to not.
Well, it's Jurassic Park. How do you feel?
Oh, I feel good, but I'll choose again.
All right, all right. Yeah. Let's see what we got. All right, I don't know what this is. Somebody's going to have to explain it. Exo Squad? Is that a thing? Can anyone confirm that that's a real thing? It's a cartoon? Good enough. Who wants to hear Jurassic Park? Who wants to hear Exo Squad? Clearly, whoever wrote that was barely in favor of himself. Jurassic Park for Ms. Davidson. Big hand for all of your round two competitors. If you guys would be so kind as to let the round two folks know that I need somebody, if you see them in either of those green rooms, and if we've got someone from round two, it would be delightful if they happened to pop out right this very... Nope, nope, not yet. Oh, every time. While we're waiting for them, let's hear some stuff we were spared tonight. We did not have to hear anything about the doctor from Pretty Little Liars. I don't know what that is. Ooh, The Wire. I'm surprised no one's done The Wire yet. That seems like a gimme, doesn't it? Anybody round two? Kyle Kinane, ladies and gentlemen. Big hand for Kyle Kinane.
Sucks, so let's get out of the way.
Brock Wilbur, he's 9 feet tall.
Oh, okay.
Big Enos and Little Enos approached the bandit and offered him the bet. $80,000 to bring 400 cases of Coors from Texarkana to Georgia. Is your name pronounced more like anus or penis? Replied the bandit, followed by his signature laugh. I can't do it. He knew he couldn't do it alone. That's where Bandit's best friend, Cletus Snowball Snow, came in. But it would take more than friendship to convince him. Contrary to popular belief, Cletus didn't earn his nickname because he drove a refrigerated tractor trailer. And Bandit didn't earn his by going along with societal norms. Bandit met up with Cletus to propose the idea. Cletus told Bandit what he had to do. He had to blow him and then spit the ejaculate back into his mouth. All well as Basset Hound Fred watched. Goddamn, Snowball, this is the gayest shit I've ever done, and I've worked with Dom DeLuise in a unitard. Nevertheless, he swept Cletus's shaft with his notorious groom's broom. That's what I came up with for mustache. The groom's broom. Until it's... Bat its nicotine-flavored batter into the back of his throat. All right, open up, Cletus. The bandit gargled. We only got 28 hours. Bandit patooied his favor into Cletus's maw, wiped his mouth on his sleeve, and hopped into his Trans Am. Hot dog, said Cletus. I must have had too many corn nuts yesterday, because that just tasted like shit. He pulled the horn twice, and they were on their way. At a rest stop not far from town, Sally Field jumps into Bandit's sweet-ass Trans Am. He nicknames her Frog. Why is that, she says. Because, the bandit says, you're cute, and I want to shove a firecracker up your ass and let it explode. The firecracker is my dick. Frog embodies her new nickname with fervor and hops onto the bandit's lap while he speeds out of the rest stop, her small Sally Field boobies flippeting about from the open T-tops of the Trans Am. After all the high-speed fucking, Frog confesses, I should tell you, I was supposed to marry a sheriff's son, so that's probably going to complicate your preposterous plan of driving a truck full of beer to win a bet. Bandit squealed. If you think that's preposterous, wait till I race cross country in an ambulance with Farrah Fawcett's tits. They speed past a wincing Jackie Gleason. He's wincing because maybe he's getting butt fucked because I'm running out of time writing this, and why not? Think about Jackie Gleason getting butt fucked by Alice Cramden in a strap on, and he's biting his lip, and she leans in and whispers menacingly, "Who's going to the moon now, you son of a bitch?" Anyway, Snowball and Bandit and Frog all make it to Georgia with the beer, and that's where Big Anus and Little Penis offer the gang another bet to haul clam chowder, but that's really just an offer, blah, 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 something about chunky pussies.
Kyle Kinane, ladies and gentlemen. Round two, who else we got? Kevin Biggins, ladies and gentlemen.
Stay there. I'll be right here.
Okay, good. I'll just a short story. I was asked to do this tonight because my last name is Biggins, and my uncle's name is Dick Biggins, which is true, and he used to have a little joke that he used to tell me. He'd go, you know, Kev, even my mom calls me Dick Biggins. And I said, Grandma calls you Dick Biggins? And he goes, yeah, because my dick's big. Thanks, Uncle Dick. I'm eight years old, by the way. Okay. Anyway, I was given Castaway, and this is the erotic story of Blastaway. Let's go ahead and skip the first half hour of the story, which deals with the very exciting world of package delivery logistics. So we come up, that's a joke. We come up on our vanilla hero, billionaire Tom Hanks, who could never survive on a desert island. He wakes up on the shores of Normandy Beach. No, that's not the right one. He wakes up to find himself alone, plane wrecked on a tropical island, and without even exploring the island to see, you know, if he's alone, he decides he needs to masturbate. Because it's been a long trip. So Tom whips out his penis, which has been shriveled, you know, from the cold water, to find it non-responsive. Okay? He needed inspiration. Unfortunately, the only picture he had brought with him was a locket of his mannish wife, Helen Hunt. Now, this would not suffice. So he decided to burn the picture in order to start a fire, which he cooked a fish on, which only reminded him of his wife's foul-smelling vagina. So he's back to square one. Now, desperate for something to fuck, he searched the island far and wide. A pine cone, a wasp's nest, the sand, a blowfish, a tree, the polar bear from Lost, which was there but ran away. None of these things. So at wit's end and totally delirious and with no imagination, if you've seen The Terminal, he saw a volleyball float ashore. And he picked it up and immediately thought, I'll go ahead and fuck this volleyball. He named it Wilson, not because it was the brand of the volleyball, because it was the name of his bitch wife in real life, Rita Wilson. So the volleyball's name is Wilson. Now, he pricks his finger to draw blood, which he used for some reason to draw a very mannish face on the volleyball. And he wished he'd drawn a woman's face, but it was too late. He doesn't like blood. Then he used some loose twigs and stuck them in the top of the volleyball to make it look more like Kurt Warner's wife or Bridget Nielsen from Rocky IV, who he used to masturbate to in the 80s. Now, he spoke, you know, sweet nothings and to the ball and got some coconut milk for both of them to drink. And after they had had a sufficient amount of coconut, he decided it was time to fuck the ball. And he used one of the sharpened twigs to cut a hole in the mouth and said a prayer to God because he's a very religious man. And this was he knew he was going to feel shame after this for fucking a volleyball. He stuck his penis in the volleyball's mouth and gave it a good fuck. And as he was about to come, he screamed, Wendy! Because he knew he would go to hell if he yelled the name of a man while fucking a volleyball. Thank you very much.
Okay. Kevin Biggins, ladies and gentlemen. Matt Dwyer. Keep it going for Matt Dwyer.
I don't need that.
Just fine.
This is going to be fucking really weird to read with this fucking... All right, I guess I got to do this. Sorry for my technical issues, everybody. Motherfucker!
First time with a microphone, this guy.
I'm a cousin. He's just letting me do this for kicks.
It's his make-a-wish.
I have cancer, everybody. Pity fuck later. I call this news... I already fucked up. I call this Spew Jizz Radio. When I was in my 20s, I had moved to L.A. and was struggling to find a job. I was starving, in need of money, and then to the end of my rope. Having just received an eviction notice and too depressed to know what to do, I headed down to a bar to spend the last $5 I had on a beer. Out of nowhere, Dave Foley was sitting next to me. I was trying to be cool and didn't want to recognize him, though I had been a big fan of his for many years. Foley ordered his drink, took a sip, and gave me a glance. I pretended not to notice. He glanced again. I again pretended not to notice. I glanced, and we caught eyes. "How would you like to make $2,000, he said. I didn't know what to say. I was dumbfounded, and David could see that. See, if I go down to Hollywood Boulevard, these Ohio housewives don't see anything other than Dave Nelson, and I can fuck any of them I want. It's literally like shooting fish in a barrel, which is a good metaphor since fish and pussy smell the same way. All I need you to do is tape me fucking these sweet, hot babes for $2,000, and it's a party you've never seen. I was hesitant. I was an innocent Catholic boy from Chicago. I felt guilty masturbating. This was something totally out of my league. Yes, I said. I had to. My future depended on it. Great, Dave said. And we headed down to Hollywood Boulevard. One would have thought Elvis was walking down the street as so many women came up to him in large T-shirts, hiding their overly suckled mom tits. Dave Nelson! Dave Nelson! They yelled. He was like the lead singer of Poison, Rat, or some other insipid 80s band as he picked chick after chick for the fucking. It was insanity. Women left babies in strollers, told their husbands to fuck off as they left with the Dave Nelson. Before I knew it, we were in a seedy Sunset Boulevard motel. Dave winked at me to set up the camera as he threw Marna, a mother of three, to the bed from Schaumburg, Illinois, and Clara, a hairdresser from Detroit, next to her, and said, "Breaking story today on news radio. You two married bitches are going to eat some stinky pussy." You could see the confusion on their faces, but you could also see the honor, for they were in the presence of a Hollywood star. Dave pulled down the pants of Henrietta, a real estate broker from Iowa, who until just a few moments ago was on her honeymoon. But now the only moon we were seeing was her big ass, as Dave began rimming her brown calamari as he fingered her poontang. Dave turned to me and said, "You getting this? Get a close-up of this." And Dave pulled out his hard cock, which had a tattoo of the Canadian flag on the head of it. "Time for the U.S. to merge with Canada." Dave quickly crammed his cock up her ass and sang, "Oh, Canada," or however the fucking melody goes. He grabbed the back of her hair and said, "U.S. is the best piece of real estate I've ever seen." Don't know why he said it like a slave in some old movie, but we'll move on. Dave turned to me and said, "I bet you'd like to get into this sea of Midwestern cheese-eating pussy, wouldn't you?" Sadly to say, I did. These were the exact kind of women I used to masturbate growing up in Chicago. Dave smiled and said, "Get in here. If we don't DP a real estate piece of coos, you don't know what life is." I didn't know what life was. I wanted to know. It's why I moved to L.A. so I could squeeze. So I squeezed my way under that Detroit mama and slipped my dick into her wet, hairy pussy. A weird low baritone soundly filled the room. Dave said, "Sounds like Coltrane brought his sax." Nice way to cover up a queef. Then Dave and I high-fived. I began fucking along with Dave. Weirdly, I could feel his ding-dong slide up her butthole as mine hesitantly slid up and down her pussy, which was so hairy it reminded me of Don King. Oh, Andrew Dice Clay. As we pounded on this lady's different orifices, I couldn't help but think of Kids in the Hall, News Radio, and that weird astronaut movie he starred in that no one saw. As we both came inside this woman, Dave rolled off her. She remained on top of me, and she began to sob. Then the other two girls just continued eating pussy as if we were never there to begin with. Dave pulled out a 20 and said, "Did I say 2,000? I meant 20. Welcome to Hollywood, asshole." And then he left us there alone in the stench of our own stinky genitalia. Thank you.
Matt Dwyer. There's Jan Davison. Big round of applause.
Matt got a little crazy up here.
Jurassic Park. I can't wait to consummate our union in the eyes of God with sexual intercourse, Jill said to her husband of only 12 hours, Bob. They were newlyweds and ecotourists. She stared lustfully at her new husband. Thank Christ for Christian Mingle. They landed at their honeymoon destination that all their friends pitched in for, a brand new jungle reserve off the coast of Costa Rica, Jurassic Park. Jill wanted to go to the Poconos, but she politely accepted the gift. Bob and Jill were welcomed to Jurassic Park by an old man holding an amber mosquito staff. And he welcomed them by saying, "Welcome to Jurassic Park." Jill thought it was quite over the top. The plant-eating dinosaurs were beautiful and majestic and kind of miraculous because Jill was raised fundamentalist Christian and found creationism a bit confusing, and she just chose not to believe in dinosaurs at all. But the John Williams music was getting annoying, and she just wanted to get to her honeymoon suite. Her body was so filled with anticipation of exploring her own body with her husband Bob's body. their virgin, nubile, young 35-year-old bodies. I can't read my own writing. Just then, there was a power outage, and their Jeep had to take a sudden detour. The old man said, "Everything's going to be okay." But Jeff Goldblum said it wasn't going to be okay. And then he started saying some really confusing, boring math stuff. But when Jeff Goldblum speaks, and his weird mannerisms and pauses drive women crazy. And with all of her sexual anticipation, her brand new honeymoon panties were totally soaked. Just then, thundering footsteps. They could smell her. The gigantic T-Rex jaws clamped down on the Jeep and lifted her out and carried her away to the lunch nest. But it felt fantastic. And the T-Rex tongue was exploring her body and tasting her body. Her legs and her breasts. And her hot area. And then the giant lizard laid her down in the lunch nest. And turned and walked away. She called, "Don't go." She wanted more. But just then the velociraptors came. Oh, they looked mean. But their tiny, weird little hands were elegant and sharp. And they tickled her in special places. She was coming very close to a place that she didn't know existed. And then the stegosaurus came and, you know, stuck her with one of the stegosaurus things, like just totally just penetrated her with the back of the stegosaurus tail. And that was, she just just exploded then. And then those things came and licked up her juices. And then the plant-eating ones that aren't brontosaurus, because it was a totally different time period. It was a totally different period in, in dinosaur. And but they came down. They like munched on. She came again because they were like munching on her like the cow planting cows they are. And she just like it was. And then that other dinosaur, you know, the guy from Seinfeld, he came and gave it to her really good. And then as she stared up in the night sky and saw the pterodactyls flying across the moon. She thought, yeah, God created dinosaurs. And Jesus probably wrote them. And I am going to give Jurassic Park an excellent review on TripAdvisor.
Chad Davidson. Keep it going for DC Pearson, ladies and gentlemen. There he is. Greasy DC. Woo!
Magic the Gathering. Look, said Nina Persson, the coquettish blonde lead singer of the Swedish pop band The Cardigans. I just took a 19-hour flight with connections in London and then Atlanta, leaving the sessions for my band's follow-up album, Gran Turismo, in midstream, and came here to this American middle school nestled in the foothills of Ahwatukee, Arizona, for one reason and one reason only. To fuck the braces off your face, 13-year-old DC Pearson. I barely looked up from the lunch table. Nina, sweetie, I said, do you mind? I'm trying to play Magic the Gathering. I turned my attention back to the game. Is it still your turn? I asked Chung Hoon Kwan, my current opponent and second best Asian friend. He shook his head. I reached down and began my untap phase. I could explain what that is to you, but you don't really care. I just, Nina began, it's just, none of the guys in Europe have what I'm looking for in a sexual partner, a deep and abiding fondness for the movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I called the United Nations, and they said according to their files, the most rabid Holy Grail fan was a 13-year-old boy in Arizona, but that I should be careful. His tendency to wear triple extra-large t-shirts emblazoned with the Spam logo and penchant for putting an entire block of cheddar in the microwave and eating it with a fork after school render him positively irresistible to women. And now that I stand here before you, my stylishly designed, sensibly engineered Swedish lady equipment humming with uncontainable desire, I must say, I know exactly what they were talking about. To quote our only hit to date, Love Fool, love me. Love me. I'm purposely not quoting the next line, say that you love me. I don't care if you love me. I don't care what you say. I hope at some point during it you let fly with a knee. But honestly, whatever. Just lob your untrained, as yet hairless, comically undersized genitalia in my general direction, and I'll do the rest. You've come here today a boy. You'll leave a man, having been deflowered. Stop right there, I said. The only flower I'm interested in is the Black Lotus, the rarest card in all of magic. One of the fabled Power 9 cards, which were only printed early in the game's history in the Alpha, Beta, and Unlimited sets. The most sought after of its 9 ultra-powerful counterpart cards, Ancestral Recall, Time Walk, Mox Sapphire, Mox Jet, Mox Ruby, Mox Emerald, Mox Pearl, and Time Twister. The Black Lotus is banned from tournament play. A mint-condition Lotus can catch up to $100,000 at auction. A tapped Lotus adds 3 mana of any color to its owner's mana pool, despite the Lotus itself having a mana cost of 0. It's then I realized Nina's left hand was plunged deep inside her sex, and she was pleasuring herself to the impossibly arousing sound of a boy who knows his magic. I reached out and slapped her hand away. Hey, I said, respect the game. Chung Hoon and I attempted to resume play. My attack phase was upon us, and I was just about to unleash a goblin onslaught I'd been building to all game when the X-Files Gillian Anderson, indisputably the most beautiful woman in the world, appeared out of nowhere, and she and Nina fell into a rapturous embrace on the cold, chocolate milk-stained tile, bringing each other just to the brink of orgasm before begging, nay, ordering me to take them all the way. Finish her, one would scream at me regarding the other. Finish her, evoking Mortal Kombat, a game I was not allowed to play. I just sighed the sigh that Magic the Gathering players know all too well. The sigh of a boy who's just started a new game, only to find himself inundated with vag. My friend Darren stepped over the ladies and approached our table. He pulled an elaborate protective jewel case from his backpack. My dad and I went to a convention this weekend, he said. Check out what I got. A Black Lotus. I came.
DC Pearson. DC, stay right there, man. We're going to bring everybody up from round 2 for judging. Please welcome Kyle Kinney, Matt Dwyer, Kevin Biggins, and Jan Davidson back to the stage. All right, so... once again, I'm just going to remind you first of what everybody did in order. So we started with Kyle Kinane with Smokey and the Bandit. Then we had Kevin Biggins with Castaway. Then Matt Dwyer with News Radio. Jan Davidson with Jurassic Park. And DC Pearson with Magic the Gathering. So by applause, starting from Kyle Kinane, Smokey and the Bandit. Kevin Biggins, Castaway. Matt Dwyer, News Radio. Jan Davidson, Jurassic Park. DC Pearson, Magic the Gathering. DC Pearson, your round 2 champion. Big round of applause for everybody from round 2.
That does it for round 2. To hear round 1 from this show, go back and download episode 110.
If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. And for more details, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or the show at CE Fanfic. Have you been enjoying this free podcast? Well, you can help competitive erotic fanfiction stay free by completing this short anonymous survey. It'll take no more than 5 minutes. Your answers will help match our show with advertisers that bet... And your answers will help match our show with advertisers that best fit the sensibilities of the podcast and the listeners like you. Listeners who complete the survey will be entered in an ongoing monthly raffle to win a $100 Amazon gift card. We promise not to share or sell your email address, and we won't send you email unless you win. Please go to podsurvey.com/Brian. That's podsurvey.com/BRYAN to take our survey and get a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Thanks.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.